This is Major Roy McBride. I'm attempting to reach Dr. Clifford McBride. This is Dr. McBride's son. Dad, I'd like to see you again.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Subbeacon, sponsored by Ethos Life Insurance. I'm Sonny Bunch, along with Jonathan V. Last. And subbing in for Vic Mattis today is Matt Continetti. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look under podcasts and search for Subbeacon. You will easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. We have a review we're going to talk about a little bit later, but you leave good reviews, unlike the bad review that was left, that was falsely left for us. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, how are you doing?
I am great. Matt Continetti. It is awesome to be here. Is this the first time we've ever done a show on the Subbeacon without a full-time Subbeacon employee?
I don't... Who's this full-time Subbeacon employee?
What do you mean?
I've been on the show several times.
He's been on the show.
Have you forgotten?
Without a full-time Subbeacon employee. Because
you mean Freebeacon employee.
Freebeacon employee, sorry. Right.
Oh, I see.
He's still employed.
I'm still employed.
He's still on through the
end. I'm still the founding editor.
Well, sure, but not. Yes. I mean, you are on to.
Well, I'm compensated for my work. I will be compensated for my services, including this show.
You're gonna invoice the company.
You think I would do this for free?
No, that's foolish.
Hang out with you guys for free?
How are you, man?
I'm miserable.
Yeah? Tell me why.
Nothing.
Let's get right to that. Did you shine shoes last night? And so no. It just wasn't as fun
nothing
as you'd
can
hoped
get,
it?
Nothing can ruin a day than a lousy Uber ride. And this is the thing. And it's not even... The ride itself was very nice. It was the time between ordering the Uber and the Uber's arrival that screwed up my schedule today.
Did you get
and
one of these?
And that was just traffic. He didn't have any control over that.
Yeah.
He just got
stuck in traffic.
Fortuna was against me this morning.
Yeah.
So
it's
that's
hard.
Just put me in a funk.
Look out, world.
look out.
Look out, world.
Look out, Chuck Todd.
Matt Connetti.
See him later today.
Matt Connetti's coming in hot.
Loaded for bear.
Santino, how are you?
Note to listeners, this is being taped on a Wednesday, so if you go to MSNBC tonight on Thursday when you're listening to this, you will not see Matt Continetti on your screens, probably. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe. Are you doing Thursday, too?
No.
Okay. So, if you didn't catch him last night, you missed it.
You don't need to catch me any night.
Everyone needs to catch Matt every night. All right. I'm fine. I don't know. I don't really have anything.
Want to talk more leather goods?
For the morning, for the weekly wrap-up.
Did you get an email from Saddleback Leather after last week's show when we essentially did a 15-minute spot for them with no compensation?
No, I didn't. I didn't because I don't send them the things that I say about them. I'm not desperate for free stuff. I'm happy to pay for the things.
Well, I don't mean free things, but it would be nice to get an email from Saddleback Leather just saying we really appreciate that you love our product.
Well, why are we doing another 15 minutes on Saddleback Leather uncompensated if you're so worried about it?
Fine.
You're so worried about it. How's
Let's
your watch
talk about
collection?
The movie.
How's your watch collection, JVL?
You know,
I
think we are poised to make an addition.
Oh. Again?
But I don't want to talk about it. I haven't bought a watch in forever and a day.
So like 2 months?
Much longer than that.
When
maybe.
Did
Six
you
months?
Buy the one that you're wearing right now?
I did not buy this. This is the Seamaster. This is the anniversary watch given to me by my lovely wife, the Amiga Seamaster.
Beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's my avatar on Patreon.
On
oh,
Patreon.
You have a Patreon?
JVL's Patreon.
We'll talk about that later.
Speaking of
what about your Gab account?
Speaking of uncompensated ads,
TikTok.
Is your Patreon linked
TikTok.
To your Gab account?
What is TikTok? So the New Yorker did a piece on TikTok.
I know.
And so I have not mastered Snapchat. In fact, I found Snapchat too confusing to use after 5 minutes, so I just abandoned it. But the kids are already off of that and on to TikTok.
TikTok. My understanding is that TikTok is a bit like a hyper Vine. Remember Vine?
I remember Vine.
I feel like TikTok is kind of like that, except a little bit longer and a little bit more involved.
You know what I feel like? Old.
Old.
And that TikTok is just the latest piece of evidence confirming this fact. The other is the hip hop artist known as Lizzo.
Lizzo.
People are talking about her.
Starring in Hustlers. Lizzo.
She's in Hustlers?
Yeah.
People are talking about her, and it just occurred to me the other day, I don't know who she is. I don't know what she looks like. I think I've heard one of the songs. I didn't really like it. And that's I realized I'm a middle-aged man. And so TikTok, please, it might as well be Neptune. Little foreshadowing there for the movie. But
you couldn't
as well
save
be
that
from,
for the transition? God.
It might as well be from Neptune.
I assume that if TikTok is in the New Yorker, that means it is already passé among the kids and they're already on to something
new.
No,
but the author of that piece was Ja Tolentino.
Ja Rule?
Ja Tolentino. Oh. I think. And she's one of the kids.
She's with the children.
She's the second most important essayist of our time, next to soon-to-be Nobel Prize winner Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Of course. Question.
You're trying to hurt me? And it's working, but I'm not going to show it to you.
I'm telling you the truth.
Is TikTok one of these things that will end up being overly, massively overvalued?
Like WeWork?
Like WeWork, or like Theranos? I'm actually listening to Bad Blood right now.
It's amazing, right?
It is fantastic. The book about Theranos.
Len Carreyrou had done the reading for John Carreyrou's book.
I don't know.
That would have been amazing.
Is that a Calm reference?
No, Len Carreyrou is a famous Broadway actor who sang originally the role of Sweeney Todd in Sweeney Todd. It doesn't matter what.
Broadway.
What is this?
You wait till we get John Podhoretz on
Broadway
the show to talk about Broadway, all right? You save that for one of these days I'm out and J-Pod is here. Well, this has been a fantastic start to the show, guys. We're really staying
Astra.
On track.
So let's just talk about the movie. There's a lot to talk about.
Okay, good. Speaking of old British houses, we were just talking about old British houses, right? Over the weekend, Downton Abbey took the top spot at the box office with $31 million, followed by Ad Astra with $19 million. And in third place was Rambo Last Blood, which took in $18.9 million. Do you guys have any box office thoughts other than decline being a choice that we have made, given the trouncing of Rambo by Downton Abbey?
That about sums it up for me. Have you ever watched? Who here has ever watched?
I actually went
a minute of Downton.
I watched 0 minutes of the show, but I did go see the movie with my wife, which was a fascinating experience.
Jonathan,
I watched the first season, and like with Mad Men, this is a show that should have existed for one season because it had a story to tell. And then after it was done with the story, because it was very popular, they just turned it into a soap opera, mm-hmm. and so I tapped out.
I have never seen a minute of either property, and I have no intention
you know
of
what?
Ever seeing
instead
it.
Of, instead of seeing Downton Abbey, just go rewatch Gosford Park, which is the single best movie.
Which is a Robert Altman film.
Robert Altman, right. And I think his best film.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've seen scenes of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
It's amazing.
But, yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Sonny, do you love Gosford Park? I feel like this is one of those great underrated...
I don't.
Like Sonny doesn't like Altman as a rule.
I don't either.
It's not that I don't like Altman. It's just that I like a very narrow band of Altman. I like MASH
Nashville.
Kind of. I don't like Nashville is the thing. I like Nashville is like him at his most self-indulgent. I'm not a big fan of all that.
Shortcuts is most self-indulgent.
No, but Shortcuts is at least funny.
Is it?
It is. More so than Nashville, certainly, which is like kind of dour and full of itself. I don't care for it. No,
you know a movie from that period that I recently watched, Being There, with Peter Sellers.
Oh yeah,
Chauncey Gardner. Excellent movie.
People love it. I've never seen it.
I particularly recommend it to you, considering that there is some relevance to the current political scene. And of course Sellers is just so good. He was so good.
I believe at one point in time he was the highest paid actor in the world.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Speaking of Downton Abbey, though, I did go see it. I did go see the movie. I saw it with my wife. She was very, very into it. I, having not seen a single minute of the show, was not into it.
Did you
like,
need to see the show? Kind of more, or what was it like going in cold?
It was fascinating because you could see all of the things that were happening in the show. It's a bit like the Deadwood movie, okay? So the Deadwood movie, in theory, I think you probably could have watched that as a standalone property. A lot of things wouldn't have necessarily made sense to you, but at least the overarching story would have made sense. But there are things in the Deadwood movie where you saw what was happening and you realized that this wasn't really an extended episode of Deadwood. It wasn't a 2-hour episode of Deadwood. It was a massively truncated season of Deadwood. It was a 2-hour season of Deadwood. So there were things that would happen that you were like, okay, that I could see how that would play out over 50 minutes. And it would be better than this. The movie was still fine. The Downton Abbey movie was very much like that. For instance, there is a whole subplot where some Irish national tries to assassinate the king for some reason.
The chauffeur?
No. He stops the assassination attempt.
For some reason, Sonny, maybe it's the British colonization.
Keep your intersectionality out of here. This Irish guy is like, he pops up like in 4 different scenes for about 30 seconds each time, and it's like, what is going on here? And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's like trying to kill the king again for some reason. Don't know why. Everyone loves the king. So you could see that playing out over like 3 episodes of a show, right? That is a thing that each of these appearances should have been about 10 minutes long, and we actually get to understand his motivations and blah blah. So the whole movie is kind of like that. It feels like a massively shortened season of a television show, which, you know, it's good and bad, I guess. I don't know. I didn't care for it. My wife loved it. And what's interesting about this film, I saw a screenwriter talking about this on Twitter, is that this is one of these movies that appeals very strongly to a relatively narrow band of the film-going population, older women. And it is a huge hit. It's a huge hit. I mean, this is... Well,
territory.
I mean, older being like older than 20.
Okay.
You know, like women above the age of...
Because your wife is not an old woman.
Right. Women out of their teenage years. If you're looking at the quadrants, right, it's the over 18 female, you know, market.
Thank you. I did that for your own safety.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's kind of like narrowly cast at a segment, but it hits it hard, right? And this is the lesson of Crazy Rich Asians, which was kind of narrowly cast at the Asian audience, but then expanded out of it once people realized it was, you know, a good fun rom-com type movie.
Women like that one too.
Older women probably like that one as well. Yeah,
Mamma Mia.
You know where the commonality is? Matt Continetti. Hasn't seen either one and has no interest. I saw parts of Crazy Rich Asians on the seat next to me on a flight returning from Japan. And the female protagonist was quite attractive.
Fetching.
She was a fetching lady.
Crazy Rich Asians is a weird movie, too, because it was celebrated for being so woke and so hip. But it is a 100%
totally.
Defense of like capitalist excess. It is wealth porn.
And family.
From start to finish. And
family
and the importance
blood lines,
of family.
Yeah.
So anyway, interesting stuff there, I guess. I don't know.
What happened to Rambo?
Rambo, you know, who needed another Rambo movie, first off? Second off,
Matt Continetti
did.
And everyone who works at the Washington Free Beacon.
I did, Sonny.
No,
I was advised not to come onto this program this week precisely because we were not discussing Rambo Last Blood.
By who?
By
who?
Several,
Aaron Harrison,
several
perhaps?
Of my coworkers said it or that I should, out of protest, not see Ad Astra.
Instead,
go see Last Blood and then
that.
Talk about that.
Oh, no, we should have done that.
We could talk about
amazing.
That because I've seen. I saw Rambo as well.
Well, I haven't seen Rambo because I was a good boy and I went to see Ad Astra, which we'll get to. And I have no complaints about that. But I'm just saying, I want to see the Rambo movie. May I give you my explanation?
Yeah.
The audience for the Rambo movie, i.e., me, we're too busy. We're too busy to go to the movies. We have lives. We have children. We have NFL football now on Sundays. We're entering the Major League Baseball playoffs. We're not busy. So what do? What does every middle-aged dad do now? We wait for video on demand. It's that simple. And I'm going to watch it on video on demand in the comfort of my home. I don't have to go out. I can have my own snacks. You know, I can have the coffee if I want to. Remember, there was no coffee. When I went to see the Bruce Springsteen, Blinded by the Light. That's why. I think there's like a middle-aged, overweight dad strike against going to the
cinema. We're just not going to the movies.
We're just not going anymore. We just wait. We just wait until we can see it on video on demand.
Did you like it, Sonny?
It's fine. It's fine.
Rank it. Rank the Rambo movies.
Ugh.
what? How do you seem so...
First Blood, Part 3, Part 2. No, First Blood, number 4, the fourth one, was just called Rambo. So
number 1 is First Blood.
Number 1 is First Blood. Yeah, which is definitely the best. Which is actually like a good movie and has like resonant themes and whatnot. Other than like let's blow stuff up, which is fun.
Very different from the Rambo.
It's a very different sort of movie than the others.
It's more like The Deer Hunter.
Yes.
Totally. And yes. Rocky. I mean, Rambo and Rocky were, when they came out, they were coming from a very specific place, which was the ethnic working class of this country. And then both franchises assumed something different as they developed.
So in order, I would say number 1, number 4, number 3, number 2, and then this one. I would say this is probably the worst of all the Rambo movies.
Mm. Wow.
But that said, it was definitely a like
so
high concept. It was basically
but
taken.
There's a lot of violence.
It's basically taken on the American border with Mexico.
And you're telling me it was the worst of these movies?
Yeah, the
that sounds amazing.
The one where he goes back to Vietnam, the one where he goes to Afghanistan,
yeah,
so much better.
Both very good, but again, different times,
better times,
different places,
better times. You know. Trying to make America.
I'm gonna make some pop my own popcorn.
Put some powdered cheese on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The way I like. I don't have to conform to AMC's rules and regulations.
Melt some caramel over it. All right. Okay. Ad Astra.
Want to do a big boy review for us, Sonny?
I don't know. I feel like I've been talking a lot. I don't do it. Do you guys want to do a big boy review? JBL, do you want to do a big boy review? Or do you want me to do the big boy review?
You should do it.
All right. So Ad Astra is a bit like... I was very hesitant to make this connection coming out of the film just because the only real obvious connection is Brad Pitt. But Ad Astra reminds me a little bit of Fight Club with the kind of shallow anti-consumerism and the daddy issues and all that stuff. If you took all of the humor and all of the irony out of Fight Club and made it super boring for half of the film, that's basically my elevator pitch for Ad Astra. It's like Fight Club, but way more boring, and it's in space for some reason.
No, it's Heart of Darkness in space.
I mean, you could say that as well. That's fine. That's what everyone else is saying. I'm not everyone else, JBL. I'm trying to go my own way.
That's what James Gray said. James Gray's literal elevator pitch was... Heart of Darkness in space.
Right, except...
James Gray, the director.
It fails on that level. It fails on that level. Yeah. The movie to compare it to, though, isn't necessarily Fight Club. It's Gray's previous film, Lost City of Z.
Mm-hmm.
It is Lost City of Z.
In space.
Well, with a happy ending, or at least an ending where the father... Spoiler alert. The father doesn't doom the child.
Yeah, well, but here's what's interesting about the ending. So the first half of the film, Brad Pitt is on Earth.
Why don't you tell? Because nobody saw this.
So the movie is set on Earth in the near future, whatever that means. Not that near, since we've colonized the moon. We have basically airports on the moon, and we have stations at Mars, etc. We have some sort of antimatter drive that allows us to traverse great distances much more fastly than we're supposed to. For a hard sci-fi movie, the sci-fi is not very hard in this, I would say.
We're going to do a whole thing about that.
Yeah, you can get on that because I'm not super into nitpicking this sort of stuff, but it is very nitpickable. So Brad Pitt lives on Earth. He's an astronaut. He's in the military, and while he is working on some sort of giant antenna array, the pulse happens. It's a big electromagnetic something or other, antimatter blast, blah, blah, blah.
Cosmic rays.
They destroy all of the electronics. Power goes out all over the world. Lots of people die.
Does he turn into a rock monster, or does he get stretchy and elasticy?
He turns invisible.
Human torch.
He turns invisible. So he... he is tasked by the United States military to go find the source of these cosmic ray blasts, which it turns out is his dad, who has gone on an Event Horizon-like mission to Neptune, where he's trying to find life outside of the Earth. So the whole first half of this movie is kind of about this idea of humanity as an all-consuming virus, in a way. It is very much about, like, there are lines throughout the film in the Brad Pitt voiceover. It's like, we go everywhere we go, we spread and we consume, and then we spread some more. Like I said, there's this kind of shallow anti-consumerism.
That's a stupid part of the monologue.
Right, right. But that's what the whole first half of the film is about. Is about the expansion of humanity in its worst ways. And then the second half of the movie is super, super boring. He goes to Mars and then he flies off to Neptune and he's blah, blah, blah.
The trip to Neptune takes about as long as the trip to Mars.
Which is, again, we can nitpick that in a second. The first half of the movie I actually liked quite a bit because it has, for instance, space pirates on the moon. There's a whole dune buggy shootout.
Best part of the movie.
It's gripping. Great, exciting filmmaking. There is also a murderous baboon at one point.
Very good part of the movie.
I enjoyed all of this stuff. I enjoyed the action beats. And when you mix the kind of like ponderous, oh, humanity is bad, woe is us, with the action elements, I can live with all that. It's once you get rid of the action and it's just Brad Pitt being sad about his dad and being abandoned by him that the movie just dies for me. I was checking my watch, which I never do in a movie.
This is my complaint about the movie. The payoff never arrives. The whole movie is a series of episodes leading up to this supposedly epic confrontation with Tommy Lee Jones, who plays the father who Brad Pitt had thought was dead and had been really an absentee dad, even up to the point where he, Tommy Lee Jones, left for this mission to Neptune. And the reason he had to go to Neptune, they say, is because it's the first planet outside of the heliosphere. I don't know if this is true, but that means that the radio communications to and from other stars would be better than anything. Yeah. So the whole movie, with the ponderous voiceover, which was for me the worst part of the movie, is this lead up to the encounter with Tommy Lee Jones. All right, and then you have these exciting action beats, right? That are okay,
that feel like a different movie. But they feel like they're straight out of
Only two of them.
There are three actually. The fall off the tower
is awesome. So the three action beats. But what happened was James Gray clearly got to the end of the movie and was like, I'm already at 2.5 hours. What's going to happen? How do I lead it up? And so it is such a letdown. This encounter with Tommy Lee Jones, and it literally after years of angst that Brad Pitt has been building up to meet with the dad and to hold on to the dad and to be with the dad says, let me go. And he goes, okay, bye, see you. And that's the end of the movie.
Basically. Well, it's not quite the end of the movie. The actual end of the movie is Brad Pitt reconnecting with his wife. So the first half of the movie is humanity is bad. We just consume and we take and we consume and we leave these shallow, empty lives and we're terrible and awful. And then by the end of the film, the last shot of the film is Brad Pitt sitting in some yuppie restaurant, drinking his yuppie coffee, waiting for his yuppie wife, and then realizing that that's all that matters. The world, the universe is empty and terrible, so we should just screw and consume, and that's it. That's all we do. That's the takeaway from the movie for me.
He wanted a human connection. He never had any connections. The father was... First, my other takeaway from this film, I would not want to be James Gray's dad. Because if you compare this to Lost City of Z, again, both movies, the two most recent films by this director, are about children who idolize their fathers and follow their fathers to their doom. Now, the difference is, in Ad Astra, Pitt is redeemed. Pitt finds a human connection as opposed to being consumed by cannibals, which is the fate of Tom Holland in Lost City of Z. Both films visually stunning, gripping at
parts.
They
look great.
Gripping at parts, but kind of weirdly lifeless at other parts. And that was the case with Ad Astra. Jonathan.
Well,
he's just looking at us.
Hopefully Brad Pitt took out a life insurance policy before he went on this trip. Speaking of life insurance, JVL.
You like to plan ahead. You contribute to your 401k and save for the kids' college fund. If you haven't yet, you should also think about life insurance, especially if you're Vic Mattis. You may be putting off getting life insurance because you think it's complex, expensive, and time-consuming. Ethos is a faster, easier, and more affordable way to get life insurance to make sure your family's taken care of, even if you aren't around to take care of them. They're committed to finding the plan that's best for you and your budget, all from the comfort of your computer, tablet, or phone in just 10 minutes or less. Simply answer a few questions online about things like your health, age, and income, then finish your application and get a near instant approval. Everyone is different, but a healthy 35-year-old can get $1 million in coverage for only $50 a month. With Ethos, you can rest easy knowing the people you love are taken care of. Confusing terms and piles of paperwork not included. Our listeners can get started by going to ethoslife.com/subbeacon and clicking on Check My Price. Again, get a fully personalized quote by going to ethoslife/subbeacon. One more time, make sure to visit ethoslife.com/subbeacon so they know we sent you.
JBL, what are your thoughts on Ad Astra?
Your parents are both still married, correct, yeah. Fellas? Yeah, I think this movie is essentially unintelligible to anybody from an intact family. It is an indictment of the divorce culture. The consumerism is not about the consumerism of the human race. It is about the self-centeredness of fathers who abandon their families. And in a weird way, it is sort of, it is so unsparing that there is no happy ending. And when Tommy Lee Jones is confronted with the legacy of what has happened, because his work, we think for a while that Tommy Lee Jones is on purpose sending the cosmic rays out right. to kill Earth because things went bad and he changed
or
his mind.
Or he's in contact with an alien intelligence.
Right. And instead, it turns out that just like somebody sabotaged and it was an accident. And he had no idea that this was going on. And confronted with the fact that not only did he abandon his family and come out here on this mission that it turned out was absolutely futile anyway, and that the end result of it is that he's destroying the human race, he is basically unrepentant. And says, well, that's not home to me. I don't want to go back there, and then decides to kill himself. This is what it has to say to fathers who divorce their wives and leave their children. And it is and this stuff is, as you like to say, Sonny, this isn't subtext. This is just
right.
text.
Right.
And it is a little weird for Brad Pitt, who has recently left 6 of his children with his wife, to make a movie like this.
Well, did he leave the family, or did she leave the family?
Well, you know, like he went and started banging somebody else.
That's
right?
What happened.
And this is
okay. I just wasn't clear on the details.
Yeah. Anyway, all of which is to say, it was Marion Cotillard, I believe. I'm not interested in bringing up the personal lives of the artists who make these things. It's just that it did strike me that this movie, which is again so unsparing in what it has to say about divorce, and it was why I don't think it was. Good, but it was all perfect. It's all perfectly intelligible if you view it as Pitt then coming to the conclusion that all of this stuff, the professional goals men set for themselves, the things they want to do with their lives, at the end of the day, that stuff doesn't matter. What matters is life, and life is the stuff that happens when you turn inward towards the people who are right. in your life right now.
Definitely the theme of the film.
Yeah, and the rest of it, that stuff is unimportant, and you will die despondent and alone if you fixate on it.
But does it really work as a movie? Because
no.
Yeah.
Because for me, I was expecting kind of like, it's the movie sets it up as a kind of fugitive reversed, with Tommy Lee Jones as the fugitive and Brad Pitt the person who has to confine him and confront him. And so you're just spend 2 hours waiting for this confrontation.
No,
it doesn't work
at all.
And then it's exactly as you describe. He encounters a broken person and then just lets him die.
Yeah, you would have.
Well,
okay, you know.
Well, I mean, it's I don't know that it's so much he lets him die. He tries very hard to save him. Even after he like repels the ionosphere of Neptune, or whatever.
He faces a choice. Does he die with him?
Right.
Again, going back to Lost City of Z, where they die, the father and son die together. In this case, he does do the separation.
He separates from the umbilical cord to his father.
Yeah, you like that? But anyway, we were joking before the show. You said it was like, you know, a sad dad movie. I don't view it as a sad dad movie. I view it as a happy movie because it doesn't let the dad who abandoned his son off the hook. Ruined. What I hate is movies like this where the dad who has spent 35 years of his life like off being selfish at the end repents and gets forgiveness.
And all is better.
And then everything's fine after 5 minutes of hugging and learning.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff drives me crazy. Raising.
So when before the show started, I had mentioned that this is also a movie about it is definitely a movie about God, right? The search for the sublime. And one of the reasons that I thought of Fight Club when I walked out of this movie was the line from Fight Club where Tyler Durden says to Edward Norton's character, "Our fathers were our models for God. And if our fathers bailed, what does that tell us about God?" Right. That is basically the theme of this movie as well, I think, is that it is saying stop searching for aliens, stop searching for meaning in this kind of there are several references to God and religion in the film. Tommy Lee Jones frequently, like in the videos he sends back from the mission, says, you know, we're out here searching for God's creation or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. And it strikes me that, again, this movie is a dour and humorless way of making the same point.
You know, Mary Eberstadt wrote a book three books ago. I don't know, How the West Really Lost God, which is about religiosity and demographics. And she makes a point, which I've never seen somebody make before, which is that in a divorce culture where absent fathers are, at this point, almost the rule, you know, something like 49%, 47% of all first births happen to unwed mothers, I think it is. How can you understand the God of the Judeo-Christian tradition, which is God the Father, when half the kids, 40% of kids, grow up without a father, right? I mean, God is always explained as a father figure in the Judeo-Christian tradition, in a world where half the kids don't have fathers. How can that make sense? How can you put that together? How can you understand the act of creation as an act of love and all sorts of other things?
I have a slightly, all very profound for the Subbeacon, but I have a slightly...
See, when Vic's not here,
I have a slightly different interpretation of the extraterrestrial life question and its connection to theism. Which is, for the advocates of the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, many of them are desperate to find ET precisely because it would invalidate biblical religion. Mm. So if you go back to Carl Sagan, from there, very there, he's like, he would always say, what would it mean if there was this other planet and did God visit them, right? The fact that we have not found extraterrestrial intelligence, and the fact that it's not found in that movie, indeed we're the only ones
that it's explicitly rejected in the movie, that they searched
me,
everywhere
that
and
to
found
me
nothing.
Is an argument for God because it means that something special is about humanity and human consciousness.
I would agree with you, except for the fact that all of the exploration figures in this film are explicitly religious.
That is an interesting detail in kind of the world building that Gray did, to the extent that he did it. The government in this near future seems to be heavily theistic. I don't know if it's explicitly Christian, but they're all, because the Space Command people are always saying prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Pitt's always saying prayers. Tommy Lee Jones says. So there is some element in that. Maybe he's trying to say that. I don't know what he's trying to say. This is kind of one problem, I think, with his work, other than the dad stuff, which Jonathan's absolutely right about, is that he overreaches. I think it was the same thing with Lost City of Z. I mean, if you think about this guy's career, Gray, he started off doing these Joaquin Phoenix films with Mark Wahlberg, and they're all kind of about, they're very kind of urban crime dramas. We Own the Night was the one from about 10 years ago. That kind of, it's a smaller world. You kind of have a For this last, you kind of have a better grip on it, is what I'm saying. For the last two films, Lost City of Z and this, he's really kind of reaching. And there's moments in both movies where he gets it. I mean, just visually, in every element of the film, sound, music, it comes together and it's like, wow, that's a great image. Or that there's something, you know, it's really affecting me, my sensibility. But then there's all this other stuff where you're like, well, does that really fit? Why is it an action movie? Is it movie about divorce? What's going on?
It really does feel like two entirely separate types of sci-fi movie. It feels like it is kind of reaching for that 2001
right.
Style
Arrival.
sense of the
100%.
But
2001.
But except for the fact that Stanley Kubrick didn't have a shootout between the Russians and the Americans around the monolith. You know, he had the confidence in his vision to make it a kind of pure space exploration movie.
Or he had the freedom to do it.
Well, this is there is some question as to how much studio interference there was on right. some of these sequences.
Sure.
So,
can I say a couple nice things about the movie, yeah. which I didn't I like?
Well, I feel like we've been very mixed, almost mixed positive
on
this movie.
I'm definitely mixed positive.
I'm mixed negative.
So there are some world-building parts of it which are interesting. The thing that I found, the single most interesting thing in the whole movie was when Brad Pitt's character arrives on Mars and is being processed on entering to Mars. There is a sign on the wall mm-hmm. for suicide prevention mm-hmm. saying, you know, call before
you're
you do
alone.
Anything. You're not alone. Yeah. Which is a deep statement about what it is like to live,
yeah.
you know, far off and in an outpost and what that world is like.
But didn't you also like the receptionist? The receptionist yeah. behaves exactly no. as though any other receptionist would.
Except that was, it totally took me out of the movie. When Natasha Lyonne
really?
Shows up in that role.
I don't know who she is, so
that's funny.
I
thought to
that.
Myself, yeah. has Natasha Lyonne gotten herself together?
No.
And is she back and acting?
Well, she did that Netflix show, Russian Doll. That got a lot of buzz yeah. and acclaim, but her being there totally takes me out of the moment. I'm like, oh wait, that's Natasha Lee. It was like
I didn't know who she
did
was.
You guys,
so it didn't affect me that way.
You don't remember her from what was she in American Pie? Wasn't yeah. she the she had a bit of a breakdown.
Vic,
if I remember,
Vic
remember
I haven't
her.
Watched that movie in 20 years.
So. But it was like, did you guys see Loving, the movie about Loving v. Virginia? No. Anyway, there's a moment in that movie, a very serious drama about, you know, race, and about where Nick Kroll shows up as a civil rights attorney who is defending the couple at the heart of Loving v. Virginia against the state. And I was just like, what is he doing? Why is the guy from the league here? What is happening? Why is he making faces? This is a serious film, and this is almost, that's exactly how I felt when Natasha Lyonne showed up. It just took me out of it.
The other choice that was interesting in this is the notable extent to which computers and robots are missing from this vision of the future. The only bit of that we get is the psych test that he keeps submitting himself to, which is like, you know, talking to Siri and then Siri says, yes, you're not crazy.
Which Blade Runner did better? Blade Runner 2049 did better.
Hmm?
Blade Runner 2049 did better.
Yeah,
same
they do
thing.
That in there. He yeah. did take that from there.
So I looked at it, I thought that was, again, it. There's a thing about science fiction in America. I think we have gone through a very fallow period in science fiction over the last 20 or 30 years, where sci-fi has been nothing like it was in its golden age of the 50s and 60s.
We know why that is.
And it's because of the internet.
And it's because of the social justice awakening.
No, I think it's because of the internet. I think the internet really? Has turned us all inward looking. All of the things that interest people about the future right. then have to
cyberpunk.
Do with...
Cyberpunk has replaced space exploration
right.
as the dominant sci-fi theme.
And so it is the idea of like looking inward about what we can do to ourselves with computer technology
sure.
as opposed to what we can do moving outward with rocket technology.
Well, I bet
right,
you still get
the...
some good sci-fi out of Neal Stephenson.
Or
Gibson, right? I mean, on these questions.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it isn't like it was in the 50s and 60s
sure,
when it was
sure.
the golden age. And a movie like this, which has sci-fi ambitions, like real classic sci-fi ambitions in a way that, again, even the set design is designed to evoke 2001.
Tycho base. Yeah, no, sure. totally. When they land on the moon. That is, it's almost... the shot is almost exactly the
yeah.
same. I was waiting for the beautiful shot of 2001 where you're looking... skyward from the base, you know, as the landing pod comes down and the jaws of the gate kind of enclose it.
But
missing from this movie.
But to do that, they sort of banish the idea of AI and computer networks and robots. I thought that was an interesting choice to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would give it credit. Can we talk about the hardness of the sci-fi?
Yeah,
do you
please.
Guys have any patience for that?
Please.
What was the cinema score for this, Sonny? Do you
B minus.
I am not surprised.
I am surprised it was that high, frankly. I figured this would be closer to a C or C minus. Because, again, the first half of the film is what was kind of promised in the trailers and commercials. And the second half of the film is what people experienced immediately before talking to the cinema score pollsters. So I thought that might
So I went into this
throw it off a bit.
Knowing very little about Ad Astra, and what I did know was the James Gray quote in which he promised, quote, the most realistic depiction of space travel that's been put in a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's not
nonsense.
True.
That is nonsense.
Yeah. Nonsense.
And amongst the people who are rocket nerds, they were really angry about this movie.
I'm sure.
Justified.
Because it is a willfully careless depiction of space travel and everything about space. It has no concept of gravity or inertia. It does not know what the difference is between spin gravity and thrust gravity. We have a lot of really good and really accessible hard science fiction right now. If you read Andy Weir, either The Martian or Artemis, which are both great, or the James Corey Expanse series, which I was turned on to by our buddy Tom Abella, which is amazing and is just physics porn. You don't have to be an MIT or Caltech guy to grasp and appreciate hard science fiction anymore. And this gets like everything wrong. Even the basics of how the acceleration works as you thrust to go on a long-haul trip to Mars or Neptune.
But then you slow down because you have to take the Mayday call.
Right. How does it work to slow down?
It's like, hold it. You need to get there to Neptune, and the gravity is throwing you there.
Right. Even astrodynamics. So the entire concept of astrodynamics, which understands that all of these things are in motion. And so to go from point A to point B, you begin in motion from wherever you're leaving. Wherever you're heading is also in motion. You're going to slingshot around using gravity, and you're not going to a fixed coordinate. You're going to where the planet is going to be when you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And even that, they just sort of carelessly. You know, so his character shows up on the base on the dark side of the moon for his trip to Mars. And he walks in and they say, we got to leave in 5 minutes. The windows for this type of trip are so tight that you could not show up 5 minutes before.
Well, wouldn't you think also, okay, we have a base on Mars, we have a base on the moon, we can't create some type of safe passage with all the armaments at our disposal at this point, all of the tech, there's no way to protect from space pirates.
Where are the space pirates getting all of their supplies from?
And what do the space pirates want? And it's not clear, right? They just want to kill the people?
Are they trying to take them?
They kind of have a throwaway line where they say it's competition for resources. But this, again, this is, I think, gets to the question of, sorry to interrupt, Jonathan, but it does get to the question of studio interference, where it's kind of like, you have this thing and everything, but wouldn't it be cool if there was like a chase on the moon? And indeed, it was cool.
It was cool. It was the best part of
it. But it made no sense.
So I want to talk about the idea of the competition for resources. If you are up on the moon setting up a colony, you are going to make as much of what you have up there from materials that you can create on the moon or extract from the moon, which means you can use rock, the regolith they have there. You can create aluminum. And you can create glass. These are things you could all do in theory if you could set up a nuclear reactor on the moon. When we see the lunar base there, you have all of this steel and poured concrete and escalators.
Well, escalators. It's the metro station.
It is literally Washington Metro Station.
It's an airport. It's an airport. It's got a Hudson News and a Nathan's.
I think they must have filmed it in a metro because the walls are exactly like the concrete walls in our metro station.
Unless you have got a revolutionary propulsion system, transporting even a gram of weight from Earth to the moon is going to be very expensive. And so you don't transport anything unless you absolutely need it or you can't make it up there. The idea that you would need an escalator in a place where gravity is 1/5 of G on Earth, because people can just jump like 25 feet in the air when you're on the moon.
Well,
like,
and indeed, it saves him in the car chase.
In the lunar,
because lunar gravity is what prevents him from just dying when he falls into the crater. And yet, as you point out, he arrives at the base and, oh, here we are. We're fine.
Totally
we're
normal gravity.
We're walking like we're on Earth.
Walk like you're normal. Everything's fine. You're right. You know why you can't actually have a high-speed chase in a buggy on the moon?
Why is that?
Because at high speeds, the slightest bump you take sends you way
careening,
up high into the
careening,
air.
Careening to the void.
So, again, all of these things. How about this? The shape of the lunar base. It's like a rectangular office park. Do you know what shape it has to be? It has to be a dome. Do you know why? Because you've got to hold pressure. And so if you're going to hold pressure, the actual structure that's holding it needs to be have the same strength at every point, which is what you get in a sphere. That's why we have spherical constructions when we set up our Earth bases, our lunar bases, and our Martian bases. So just little things like this, which are fine. I mean, it didn't bother me, except that I showed up thinking that I was being promised hard science fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
And that bugged me. You know, in a way, like having the... Did you notice the Marlboro Man?
On the base?
On the lunar base?
Yeah.
There's
also like a Subway sandwich shop. Yeah.
No, but this one is exterior. So who would see it? So somebody has...
Oh, I missed that.
When you're coming in on the ship.
Somebody has spent... billions of dollars
on the moon
to put a billboard on the moon for cigarettes, which I imagine you can't smoke up there because it's a high oxygen environment. And one rule you're going to have in any lunar base is there can't be fire anywhere.
Well, maybe this is what the space pirates are fighting for. Maybe they're libertarians who are trying to overthrow the anti-cigarette establishment.
The great Robert Heinlein novel, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Maybe that's a call out to that.
One more thing. In a movie which the director has promised is the most realistic depiction of space travel ever committed to celluloid, to have mutant killer space baboons.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they're mutant. I think they're just...
How are they alive? How are they still alive in there?
I think pulse turned them into monsters.
The pulse set them free, maybe? I don't know.
Because what happened to the rest of the crew?
Space baboons ate them.
You don't see any bodies, though. That was what's weird. The only body you see is the captain who is murdered.
But here's my question. If this is a hyper-realistic depiction of space travel,
yes,
in the middle of what should be a routine hop from the moon to Mars, you encounter killer mutant space baboons. Don't you think it is something that you might remark upon and be like, oh my God, there's like a ship full of killer baboons, and instead they're just like, eh. As if... Yeah. It's just a thing that happens out in space.
Kinda,
man.
Isn't that supposed to be Brad Pitt's character, though? Is he's never ruffled. He's never
heartbeat. He's never gone above 80.
He never goes up. But my thing went on the hard science was, so in 2001, which clearly influenced the look of this movie, most of the astronauts on the mission to Jupiter are in cryo sleep.
Yes.
Because it takes a long time to get anywhere in space. And it's unclear to me when he's not going to Jupiter. He's going to Neptune, which is the farthest out. He just is awake for those 80, they say in the movie, I think it's like 80 days.
Yes.
That makes no sense to me.
So there are two problems with intrastellar travel, right? The first is fuel, right? So as things stand now, nobody knows how to put enough fuel for a drive because our propulsion drives simply, even theoretically, are too primitive, right? Yeah. So you can't get enough conversion of fuel source to thrust.
That's why we need our solar sail.
But the second problem and the second constraint you run into is the human body. The human body can only tolerate so much G-force. So you can accelerate, right? So acceleration is different from velocity. And when you're up in space, you can, say, go from 0 to 60 miles an hour. And then once you're at 60 miles an hour, you are weightless. There is no thrust gravity. So but you can continue accelerating from 0 to 60, 0 to 60, 0 to 60, 0 to 60. and get to a very high rate of speed. But then halfway through the chip, through the trip, you've got to swing the ship around and fire the rockets in the other direction for halfway to slow you down, right? And your constraint on how fast you can ultimately go is how much G-force can the body sustain in terms of acceleration. Mm-hmm. And this is what keeps you from ever like hitting light speed, right? You just can't go, you can't accelerate hard enough. And in the end, when we get this giant pressure wave, because he sets off the nuke and then his ship surfs home, which is insane.
Right.
Well, that doesn't work because if he's accelerating at the force of whatever pressure wave is coming out, he is turned to jelly. Like his whole, like, you know, the metal and all the component parts inside can withstand a lot more G-force than the bag of meat.
Right.
And anyway, the whole thing is, it just made me angry.
So we can all agree that Interstellar is the better sad dad space movie.
Yes.
Far,
in fact, I had that thought while I was sitting there, that Interstellar does the same thing much better. Arrival does the same thing much better. Ex Machina did a cerebral sci-fi thing much better. So he doesn't quite reach, like I said, it's an overreach, but there are moments that as just pure cinema, I was like, okay, great, I like this.
Yeah. Again, first hour, so much better than the second hour.
Those mutant baboons. Also, great effect when he decompresses the chamber with the mutant bamboon and the baboon turns to jelly.
Pops.
Yeah, that was cool.
Which also I think is not quite right.
Well, you'd expect it would have been sucked out.
Yes.
Right? Which is what happens to Space Leia.
Better.
Remember, she's sucked out before she uses her magic.
Better
to
movie
fly.
About a rescue mission to the outer reaches of the solar system. Ad Astra or Event Horizon. You guys probably haven't seen Event Horizon.
I've seen Event Horizon.
I haven't seen Event Horizon.
I would say Event Horizon, even though it's a horror movie and not a sci-fi movie.
No, 2001 is the better movie.
2001 is better than this.
2001 is better than this.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
2001 is also one of the best movies of all time.
I'm with you.
How about Tommy Lee Jones' eyebrows? Did you guys notice that?
No.
Because his eyebrows
are they caterpillar-like?
Well, I know. Donald Sutherland's eyebrows were also... Donald Sutherland, I wasn't sure whether he was acting at some points. What do you know? He's at death's door. And it's either a very convincing performance of just a bag of bones. Or he's like, someone needs to send an ambulance to Donald Sutherland's house because the time is near.
Better Brad Pitt performance at Astra or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
I still haven't seen Once Upon a Time.
I don't think this is even... close.
But I imagine
Once
it is
upon
Once, upon,
Once
upon
a Time in Hollywood is maybe his best performance. Maybe the best performance of his career.
What
and
about
he
the
has
comparison
had a great career.
To think, Tree of Life, though, which some critics have compared this movie to has certain...
I hate Tree of Life.
But his, in which case, in Tree of Life, he's the dad.
Yes.
And I think that's also the better performance.
Yeah.
I thought his performance was fine. The problem was the voiceover. And I think the voiceover got so excessive at one point where after he's on the rocket to Neptune, the voiceover says, and you're seeing him, the images of him on the rocket to Neptune, and the voiceover reads, I'm on my way to Neptune. So it's like I'm about to scream out of the theater. No
That was lazy.
Lazy.
Yeah. I couldn't even tell why all of it was in there. It's not so much that they don't trust the viewers to understand what's happening. I did not understand.
Maybe it was Gray's revenge on the studios for putting the action sequence. I don't believe there's voiceover in Lost City of Z. I have to go.
I can't remember.
I have to go back and think about that.
I was much more interested in what was going on back in the world. So. We are told that there is open warfare on the moon.
Right.
When he leaves Mars with the pantsuit lady, who is somehow both the administrator and boss of all of Mars, but has no power.
And has two things in her apartment.
Right. Yeah. And he says to her, you know they're going to come for you. And she says, yeah, I do. And I thought
Who's
to myself,
they?
I don't know who they, so who
Space
does he
command.
Know who they, Space Commander. But if I would like to see,
happened.
I would rather have stayed with her. And find out what happened to her, then continue on the trip
she has
out
kind of
to
just
Neptune.
Dropped.
And I would like to have stayed on Earth and see how Space Command plays out their cover story about what's happening to the world as 46,000 people die. And I don't know. The movie really peaks with the opening scene as the antenna blows up and he falls. But the whole time I thought to myself, if this was Tom Cruise, he actually would have built a space antenna and then jumped off of it himself.
His own stunt.
In the way that... Did you guys see this video? I don't think we talked about this. Yeah. How they made the Halo jump.
Yeah.
So they not only had Tom Cruise jump out of a plane and do a Halo jump, and a stunt double who was sitting in for Henry Cavill, who's too much of a puss to do it himself, but then a cameraman, and then a second cameraman filming the cameraman. Imagine me the second guy be like, hey, you're going to risk your life just so we can do the how we did this shot video. Have you seen this, man?
I saw a reference to it. I haven't actually
watched it. It's amazing.
I have to,
absolutely amazing.
All right. Well, any parting thoughts on Ad Astra?
No.
Good, bad. We're all mixed. Mixed positive to mixed negative.
1¾ stars.
2 stars.
I went 2.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd, but I would say
2 of 4.
Of 4, definitely 2.
I'd go 2 of 5. Yeah. Sonny, do you want to talk about reviews?
Sure. What do you want to talk about? Reviews of Ad Astra?
No. Reviews of this show.
Reviews of this show. Well, we're headed to that right now. All right, now we're on to the correction segment, and we have not a correction because some jerk. Let me look up his name real quick here on the iTunes machine. Shotgun Golfer. He gave us a 2-star review. I'm sorry. He gave us a 3-star review because he said Vic got wrong the actress who played Mom in Hustlers. Vic said it was the mom from Big. And the listener said, no, it's Mercedes Rule. Well, guess what? That is the mom from Big. Also, he said there are 4 people on the show when there are clearly 3. So this reviewer had a mistake in his review that was correcting something from the show. He doesn't get to listen anymore. Shotgun Golfer, you don't get to listen anymore. I don't even want you to go back and increase the score of your review. I just want you to never, ever listen to the Subbeacon
again. I would appreciate it if all of our minions would hop on to the iTunes, go to the Shotgun Golfer review, and thumbs down it. Because
that review was not helpful.
Is that the only mechanism for review accountability? Is the thumbs up or thumbs down of the review?
There's a button.
The meta review?
There's a button that asks, was this review helpful? And you can say yes, no, or report a concern. Maybe they could report a concern about Shotgun Golfer.
Factuality is a concern.
I don't know. That's about it. All right. That's all the time we are giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Sunny Bunch, at Continetti, at Vic Mattis if you just want to ping Vic. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon under podcasts, and we're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Anything else? You have any outtakes for us, Matthew?
Talking to the mic, Matt. We're not done yet. There's still there's the end of the show. We do the thing at the end.
Yeah, I know. I like Jonathan's hearts. I really like the hard science sci-fi.
You got to read The Expanse. It's so
books
good.
Books are too big.
No, just
too,
listen to it. Just listen. Yeah. Audiobook. Yeah. They're not that big. They're so good. Version. Oh man, they're great. Yeah, I'm taping episode 2 of my other show today.
Oh yeah,
I'm very excited.
The JVL Patreon.
The JVL show.
So what's the JVL show?
I wanted a hobby. I wanted something that I did for fun that wasn't actual work. And so I am doing another show that is essentially, I bring in a friend every week or whenever I want to. And if I don't want to do it,
because it's your hobby,
I don't have to because it's a hobby. And we just chat about whatever I really want. So I had Adam White on for the first episode, and we talked about professional wrestling. We talked about Instant Replay.
So it's not done under the auspices of the Bulwark. It's
no, just, this is just
so
my
JBL
little
Inc. To listen, you donate to your Patreon and you get a listen?
So you can, but right now, I mean, I would say the donation is just as a gate to keep out trolls and people that I don't like. Right. It is not, this is not a money-making endeavor.
Because you just want something to...
I just want something to
let off steam.
Do with my friends.
Who are you talking to this week?
I'm going to have Adam Kuyper on this week. Oh. And we're going to talk about robots. Talk a lot about robots because he has been waiting to write a book about robots for like 7 years now. And if I can't get him to write the book that I want to read about robots, then I'm going to get him to talk about robots for an hour for me. Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm going to have you guys on eventually, too. It'll be awesome.
Well, kind of busy. I got a lot of things going on.
I'd be happy. Where do you record this?
Just over at my office. We have a studio.
I'd be happy to do it.
Or I'll come over to.
Did you see? I don't think we talked the second trailer of Rise of Skywalker.
Oh yeah,
the one that's just all the clips from the other better movies,
which played. But oh, you know, one thing I said, this is one instance where I liked the trailers before the movie.
Mm.
Most of the times I don't like the trailers, but 1917 looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Ford versus Ferrari.
Ford versus Ferrari looked good. Christian Bale looks that performance seems great. What else was there? There was I even thought, I'm not a biggest Kingsman fan, but Ralph Fiennes and Kingsman, I'm intrigued. And of course, they also had the Rise of Skywalker thing, where they have just all the clips of the movies you
liked.
What
did you think?
I'm just so over it. I'm so over it.
I mean, you're still going to be there Thursday.
Yeah, of
Thursday course. Night at 7 p.m.
Well, no, I go in the next morning. Oh, okay. But yeah, I'll be there. Yeah. But it just.
Did you guys see this? Did you guys see Ad Astra on IMAX or Dolby? Dolby Atmos?
No, I saw it at the Boston.
I saw it on an Alamo for Everyone or Alamo for All screen, so it was lights up and less. They had sort of brought down the volume, and
the
idea is
good
for kids, mm-hmm. so that like kids can talk and nobody gets them. But at my screening, actually, it was all for old people, and they acted just like kids, like they were kibitzing with one another during the movie. And it's only at the Alamo for All that they're allowed to. Like, you don't get thrown out if you
talk. Was that just the only screening you could make?
It was the only one I could make. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it was fine.